It is Friday morning. Ben and Simpiwe are here with me and with you, and we're ready to take you into your weekend. Any fun planned for the weekend, Ben, Simpiwe?
No, not this weekend.
Not? No fun at all?
No, last weekend I was a bit of a city girls up and I was living my best life.
What did you do?
I went to the roast of Mini Dlamini.
And then did you go?
Yes.
How was it?
It was so
long.
Tell me. But it was so great. I got to hear some amazing South African comics. And then they brought an international act as well, Eddie Griffiths, if I'm not mistaken. So that was great. Like, that was my entire weekend. But the roast of actual Mini Dlamini was wow. I didn't know it went on that long, Gareth. You should have warned me. Oh. But I loved every minute of it. It was
wild
amazing.
Wild horses could not drag me to another roast. Jesus Christ, those things take so long.
We left at like 2 a.m. in the morning and they were still not done.
And was it Gold Reef?
No, it was right here by the Sandton Convention Center.
At least you didn't have to do that. It's the south of Joburg.
Yeah.
What a nightmare. Well,
I'm glad this still happened because that's human nature to roast people.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good to
it's
do
It's a very
that,
healthy thing to ridicule others.
No, I think that's very good.
Yes.
So a few things we do want to talk about. Did you want to say what you're doing this weekend? Anything fun?
Well, I'm watching the Masters. Oh, I mean, yeah, I think you all could have worked that one out.
I'm going to do the follow-up questions next.
Yeah.
No.
Do you think Tiger will make the cuts?
Gareth, the weather's going to play ball, but he's got to go back for his first round today and play a whole second round.
And the undulations?
It's going to get him. It's going to get him hard.
Especially with that fused ankle.
Spot on. I mean, it's such a great story to follow. Everyone knows about it.
Oh, next.
All right, so a few things here.
Creating harmony here, Sabiwe.
Mapelo says in the comments, I have a 7,000 rand take-a-lot credit that I need to cash to buy a phone from somewhere else. What an annoying situation.
Wait, how?
So obviously, Mapelo spent 7,000 rand on take-a-lot. They've credited it back to him because they couldn't find the thing that he wanted. Okay. So he's got 7 grand to spend. That's nice. I mean, it's like a savings account that doesn't earn you any interest.
But what does that get you phone world nowadays?
I don't know. 7 grand, not a lot, eh?
Some like invasive Huawei that will then
some Chinese
track your life or something.
Yeah, some Chinese thing that'll. We are watching where you go this morning.
Well, Gareth,
they give me the best cameras because I wanted to follow what's going on.
Now that you bring up that like Chinese voice,
very racist. I know. Sorry.
No, but like, South Africans are just unruly. So on TikTok, everybody.
What have we done?
No, everyone's a content creator. And this lady, I don't know her name from a bar of soap, but she just creates videos about her life. And she so happens to be Chinese and lives in China. Does South Africans not find her and be like, you're the Bluetooth device lady? Like, you are the lady who's like, Bluetooth device has connected. Yeah. And then she didn't understand. She was like, what is this? And then she says, the comments, and everyone's like, you are it.
But so because of the voice, they picked up that's her.
Yes, but she doesn't know that. She doesn't know she's the lady.
All right, so my sister's boyfriend drives this car. We all went away a couple of weeks ago now, and I'd never been in his car before. And when his Bluetooth device connects, is that the woman you're talking about?
Yeah.
She goes, Bluetooth device connected.
Yes.
That one. Oh, my God.
And she's just some lady living in China, living her best life.
And she has no idea.
She has no idea. South Africans are like, the Bluetooth
device
baby. Was
she screaming, leave me alone? Eventually, she's like, leave me. I know Bluetooth, the lady voice. Really?
Like, seriously. And then they leave comments like, the Bluetooth lady. And she's like, don't understand. What's this comment? And then we're all like, you are the Bluetooth.
Oh, you want a video? Here's a video. I can.
Yes,
here
she is.
Here she is.
A lot of people leaving this comment under my videos. The Bluetooth device has connected successfully. What does this supposed to mean? Does that mean that you use earphone to listen to the audio of my videos? Or does that mean like I sound like a Bluetooth device? I'm so confused. The Bluetooth device has connected successfully. Can someone explain this to me, please? If it's a supportive one, then thank you very much. But please explain this to me. Thank you.
I'm just going to keep laughing because I don't have headphones. Ironically, I'm not connected to this joke.
You're not connected to this joke. Your Bluetooth device, unsuccessful connection.
Thanks, James.
All right. Listen, one of the people who's turned out to be a bit of a star is J.K. Rowling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We thought she'd already been rewarded enough in life with, you know, the success of Harry Potter and all the movies and huge royalties. And she's really done very well. She used to write in coffee shops because she didn't have a place to write. And she'd sit there with her laptop and people would go, oh, look at that homeless woman.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, she was writing the great novels of a generation.
It would change the lives of kids. And
especially, what's the Harry Potter kid's name?
Daniel
Redcliffe. Well, I can't even remember. But then Hermione Granger and the ginger as well.
Yeah, the ginger. Actual name.
That's his name. Nobody knows what his real name is.
I think they gave him a name like Tom just to make him more human.
But you know how gingers are. Really? I mean, they used to throw gingers in with Jacko Macaco in the pits in Westminster. How much are you putting on a ginger? Oh, no, they'll waste my money on that. All right, anyway, so J.K. Rowling's a bit of a hero because what she's done. Oh, JP says it's Radcliffe, for fuck's sake.
Well, right. we said both, JP.
Ooh, I mean, what do you want to get in the Westminster pits with us?
After what we've just said in the last 5 minutes, there are better fights to have.
So anyway, J.K. Rowling, she's now very successful, but instead of just enjoying her money, she's decided to get involved in important social questions. She's standing up for women, and this is not a popular position. You would think standing up for women would be a thing that any decent human being would do.
Very much so.
The fairer sex, you know, women don't go and fight with each other like men do. Men should stand up for women, especially for women in women's sports and women's spaces. Women should have their own bathrooms. They shouldn't be watched by creepy men who pretend to be women with, you know, like wearing lingerie but still having a beard. It's just gross. And J.K. Rowling is basically saying, no, she is a woman. She believes in biological gender. All of this stuff is driving her crazy. And she's now threatening the Scottish government to arrest her. She's saying, if you're going to arrest anyone else for, in inverted commas, hate speech by misgendering someone, come and get me first. Because she knows if they do that, it'll be so embarrassing for them. She's got the money to fight them. She's got time on her hands. She's not writing anything at the moment.
No, probably not.
So she's standing up for women, and I think it's really great. And who knew that she would be a warrior in this fight?
But what I find about this week's, I wouldn't say revelations, it's just a day in the life. I mean, that's the thing. She's not looking for attention. She's actually just stating the obvious. People are calling her all of these things. They're calling her rabble-rouser. She's just stating the obvious. So now, Harmony, Nine, and...
Are they saying you're a rabble-rouser, you J.K. Rowling?
They probably are. Rabble-rouser. So now, like, the main characters of Harry Potter, because they are celebrities, right? So now they're obviously been molested to get most of these roles. So what celebrities generally do is they just toe whatever the line is.
You notice how
every celebrity is basically a massive leftist. Every celebrity is like, oh, trans rights are the best thing ever. Because they all have to do this to get picked for things, right? They are such...
Because the pedophiles who run Hollywood won't hire them otherwise.
Exactly. So they've got to say this stuff. So what J.K. Rowling is saying, that I will never forgive these twats for basically just saying all the stuff around trans rights and stuff. Because all they are doing is that they're just
call them twats?
Yeah. She didn't. I just did. So now what happens when all the celebs go, all my trans fans and followers, because they are such whores, all my trans fans and followers.
Only about 5 trans people in the whole world.
Like, I'm with you. I'm with you on your journey. And they say all of these things. They don't obviously mean it. They don't care. But what it does is it just normalizes all this stuff around you can't misgender and you must be more this and you must be more that. By all means, if you want to go do trans, go.
Have
a bash.
Is that a music genre that existed in the 90s?
Your life, have a crack, right?
The camel rave or whatever it was.
Go ahead.
Camel experience.
Be trans.
Do trans.
Pick me up in the vocab as you wish, but go right ahead. But now it mustn't become how we now change the world. And what J.K. Rowling is basically just saying is like, I will call a man, a woman.
Yes.
Because that's how it would work.
I mean, what a controversial. If you told anybody up to 10 years ago, calling a man and a woman would be a controversial thing. They'd chase you out of town with a pitchfork.
Yeah. And people that menstruate. No, they're called woman.
Yeah. I mean, what a rude thing to say.
She is saying, and now this is the thing what media does, because media are on the same side of the pedos and the celebrities. They have to be chosen for all these things. So they've got to toe the line too. Mm-hmm. Massive serial line toes is where I'm going with this.
Well, they also want to be invited to all the parties media people are pathetic.
So they will smear J.K. Rowling. And let's just be honest. All she's saying here is that she believes in the two genders and she's not going to stand for this. And what she's calling out is all the celebrities who now make this worse because there's people who go through these phases, right? And a lot of there's been so many tests and studies around these people, kids who are encouraged to go do this,
yes.
who then spend the rest of their lives in depression, which often leads to suicide. And all these celebrities are like, "You're so brave. I'm right behind you. I care about you." Like they don't.
No, it's fair.
And that's
it's
all
cruel.
She's doing. She's just calling them on that, saying, "You twats are just basically making this worse." And that's what all she's saying. So I reckon, because we always give great ideas on Friday for multi-million dollar businesses,
yes.
she should write a Harry Potter book around this.
Yes.
Harry Potter and the Line in the Sand, or Harry Potter and the Two Toilets, or whatever it is. I reckon she's not doing much at the moment. Mm-hmm. This will be her biggest selling book, because the people who hate her will want to read it and they'll buy it to burn it. And the normal people who want to read something, they'll be like, "This is interesting."
Okay.
So insert name here, but J.K. Rowling, I mean, obviously we need 10% royalties here. But this is your next book.
Okay.
I think it'll be it'll be a great movie. It'll be an indie success because the pedos won't produce it. But I think this is a great story.
Well, have you seen the person who's speaking out against J.K. Rowling? Someone called India Willoughby. Have you seen this person?
No.
Not familiar.
Trans activist or whatever. I just want to show you what this person looks like, because I do think it's important. You know, there's someone... They were celebrating Trans Day of Visibility on the same day as Easter, and a lot of Americans were justifiably upset about that. The person who came up with Trans Day of Visibility looks like the penguin from Batman. Horrible looking creature.
No surprise.
And I do think these things matter. So this is India Willoughby.
Oh.
Hard to tell, really.
Sure. I thought that was just Sporty Spice after a big night.
So you think she could write? That's her superpower.
Yeah,
it is. It's
J.K. Rowling,
and the funny thing is, Gareth, she's known for writing fantasy. So to write this would be even smarter.
So it would be called
J.K. Rowling and the Line in the Sand, or it could be. I mean, that's a very neutral title.
Very good.
J.K. Rowling and the Only Two Toilets, or
well, there's a podcast about J.K. Rowling. It's called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling.
Yes, ooh, yes,
good title.
Yeah, so I think that could also be the title of the book. And basically in that podcast, they have like an interview with J.K. Rowling about her thoughts, because she first got cancelled about like the transgender tweets. And she's like, "I stand by it. Like, if you want to cancel me, go ahead."
Wow.
So she was like, "It is what it is, do what it does."
She's not backing down.
She's not even fazed. She's like, "I don't care what people think or say.
Good
this
for
is
her.
My opinion, and I'm Monday not gonna change hero. It."
But this is another thing about the story, is that if we're honest, which we're not in this world, because everyone has to get paid by certain people and they've got to appease certain people or be chosen by certain people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
This is how most of us actually think. And don't say, like, "Oh, Ben, you're just a bigot and you're just so close-minded." People don't actually care about a lot of this shit. They don't. And if everyone was honest and had nothing to lose, there'd be a lot more people who would take her side. But people can't take her side, because then they're seen as the problem and they get smeared by the same forces of darkness.
I have to show you the founder of Trans Day of Visibility.
Okay.
Just got to show you what this person looks like. Do you want to see?
Sure.
Because it's unbelievable that this is a person who is taken seriously in the world. I mean, I mentioned how she looks like the penguin from Batman. But look at this. Look.
Oh.
Nice pick. I'm glad you took the time to find a flattering pick.
Wow. Okay.
Well, here's a better picture with her without shoes on. Here's him. I don't know.
They, them. Okay.
And again, that person's living their life. I would, if I saw that person in the streets, I would smile and give any attention I would to any other person. Okay. But when that person then tells me how to live my life,
that's the issue.
Yeah, you're going to get some conflict.
Yeah, that is the issue. I think that, like, people do whatever you want to do, but it's going back even to what the term, what were they say? Cis woman, right? I saw a lot of people on TikTok, they're like, "I don't want to be called cis. I just want to be called woman." Like, don't add that. And then they're like, "No, you have to." And it's like, "No, I don't have to." Like, if you want to use those pronouns, or use that, that's great for you.
Yep.
But like, I shouldn't now be obligated to like fit to your standards.
And also now you have to be the one with a funny categorization, when women have always existed and we know what they are.
So
now we have to create a different category for those people who have never been or abnormal.
Yeah. But then this brings me to the follow-up question, because I want to be open-minded, is that what are these rights that we apparently as bigots are denying? So it goes back to, like, a while ago, they were talking about pedo rights and how they were trying to make, and the left is probably still after this. They were trying to make pedophilia a sexual preference rather than a crime.
Yeah.
So then
you're using the wrong term. It's minor attracted persons.
Okay, I see. Now they've already started like
pedos.
Okay, so now to the point, and maybe this is an extreme example. So if I'm anti-pedo, am I anti their rights? And do pedos actually have rights? Can they have rights? Because their rights sound like horrible vices, which then degrade society. So if trans rights are, they can, like, what are they? I mean, I'm actually physically asking this. I assume
it's just to do the things that we do. But you would be a man who thinks you're a woman or a woman thinks you're a man and you behave accordingly.
Okay, but now that goes back to this thing about degrading society, right? Because now women are being trivialized.
I'm saying Westminster Pitts. I've got a hard line.
If there was that, things would even out. So I've just got to ask the question. Like, I think they do a terrible job in branding their rights.
Sure.
Because I'm a bit unaware here. Mm-hmm. But then when do people's rights get valued? As in like, okay, cool, those aren't rights. Those are funny preferences that are messing up for everybody. Like if my right right now was to come in here and not use a toilet, be like, Ben, that's very antisocial behavior. Mm. It's ruined the experience for all of us right now. But the fact that your rights that you've given, again, I'm using examples here,
sure.
extremes, but that would be not be a right. That would be an indulgence that's going to mess up everyone's day.
Wow. But you see, the issue, the counter argument is that, well, Gareth can go to the bathroom wherever he wants to, you know, because guys pee wherever.
I can't.
They use very abstract or very weird counter arguments, which is also part of the issue. And I think in the bigger spectrum of things, people forget that we live in a society where we also need to abide by rules.
Like yes.
When the robot is red, we mm-hmm. all need to stop. If you cross a red robot, you did something wrong.
Good point.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is that even if you come into like as a man and you become a trans woman, you still need to abide to the standards of norm of what women have to go through. And you can't just come in and be like, well, I don't want to do this anymore, so I'm not doing it because I've never had to do it before.
Yeah.
It's like, no, no, it doesn't work like that.
And there's also this element of they it's very controversial, this, but that they are actually just caricaturing women.
Yes.
That they're not.
That's a big takeout that I
they're
get.
They're not actually taking women seriously. I mean, there's this Dylan Mulvaney person who Bud Light sponsored. Remember that whole.
He's dropped a song now. And I'm so. Yeah.
So he basically thinks all women are completely stupid, asinine ignoramuses who sit around all day on antidepressants, don't get out of bed. Try on outfits. This is what he thinks women do all day.
That's basically what the song's about.
They're morons. He thinks women are really, really stupid. And I think it's highly insulting to women. And the one group who's not saying anything is women. I mean, I'm glad you're saying it this morning and J.K. Rowling's saying it simply, but mostly you hear women going, oh, no, well, it's fine. But they're the ones
that's the issue. They'll be like, yes, please.
Meanwhile, they're the ones who are losing something here because they're being ridiculed. If someone put on blackface today and walked into a public space and started doing like the jazz hands and the minstrel performance that they used to do in the 20s in America, that's hugely offensive, people would lynch that person. Hmm. But no one's lynching Dylan Mulvaney for doing this stuff, right?
Yeah, it's
and women are like, yes, queen, as you say. It's like, oh, this is great.
Well, I will always stand up for the women who aren't yas queening and actually just want to be taken seriously. Because right. That's what it comes down to for me.
Right, don't yas queen.
I'm not at all threatened or feel insecure about trans people. They can do that, but don't trivialize women.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's actually,
Can we go from this back to the exotic? Can we go back to the exotic animals? Because I
my life was so much simpler.
Yeah. Well, I just think that we've had tigers escape in Johannesburg a number of times, not even just once.
Yeah.
There are people in your place, the East Rand.
Sure, I've survived, I've survived a lot.
The East Rand is an absolute haven for people who like exotic pets.
Yeah.
And I have I don't want to get serious about this because actually, I don't think anyone should own those wild animals. I think wild animals should be wild. But, the dogs and cats have been domesticated. They had to be domesticated by someone at some point. Mm-hmm. So once they were wild too, you could argue that in 1,000 years, if we carry on trying to domesticate tigers, eventually someone will get it right. And there'll be a kind of tiger that's eventually very placid and lives happily among the people. So you can get into that argument, but I don't want to. I would like to know what the most exotic animal is that you would own.
I'm ready for a puma.
Like a black panther?
Like a
mountain lion.
Like a mountain lion. Okay. I'm ready. I think the time has come. I'm ready to have one of those. You see on Instagram from these people who rehabilitate these animals. They find them in the wild that are injured or near dying or whatever. Or just Russians. Because Russians just do whatever they want.
They have bears. And,
pumas just seem lovely. Nice natures. They're cute. They get along with dogs and kids. They look like the best animals.
Okay. Puma.
Yeah.
There we go.
A lot of people will say, I don't know, tiger, lion, all that kind of stuff. I'm being realistic here.
Scale it down a little.
Puma.
Yeah. Okay. Still, quite a vicious thing.
Sure.
You don't feed that animal, you're going to have trouble.
Well, obviously, you take good care of it. I mean,
you would have to, and you'd need a lot of space.
And I know what you're saying. That's going to make you very isolated socially, and I'm okay with that. I'll have a few close friends and a puma.
Well, Azalea says, tigers eat meat, and guess what? You're meat. Very straightforward. You can't really argue with that. I don't know that I would have an exotic animal. I'm very happy with dogs.
Look, I'm not going out of my way here. I was like, if it's on the table.
I would not.
If it's on the table, this is what I'm going for.
Don't want to test God. Not doing that thing. Nope, nope, no, no. I love my life. Mm-mm. They can wake up one day and
But God literally put them into an ark with people for restoration.
And there's a reason why there's distance between me and them right now. Like, no, sir.
All right. Going back to our roots.
Speaking of going back to our roots, we're always complaining on this show that people are uncivilized and rude.
Yes.
And they've lost their ability to behave properly in society. Basically, we've become animals. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that need to be pets. And luckily for us this morning, we have Philip Sykes on. He's an etiquette trainer, and he established the British School of Etiquette back in 2013. His expertise has been sought out by royalty, diplomats, presidential staff, and celebrities all over the world. And I think this morning, there are a lot of the people who listen to the show could do with some excellent advice from Philip. Are you going to leave, Ben?
Well, I have no headphones, so it's pretty pointless me being on a call with someone else. But bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Sorry,
bye-bye,
Ben. Bye.
Very rude. There's Ben being rude. You're very rude. You uncivilized, unsophisticated animal.
That's the first question. How do you leave the room?
Get out of here, you baboon. Just get out. Why don't you go run a railway signal thing? Do whatever job you do that can be taken by a baboon. How about that? All right, there's Ben. Sorry, that's a terrible way to start. Let me clean myself up here a little. Simpiwe, let's sit properly.
Yes, that's what I'm doing.
Let's behave ourselves. Let's get our manners in order. So, Philip Sykes, what a pleasure to see you. How are you, Philip?
A very good day to both of you and to all your listeners. It's an absolute pleasure and a joy to be firstly here in South Africa and secondly to be on your wonderful show.
I'm thrilled that you're on. I wasn't being completely sarcastic and facile just now when I said that people behave very badly and they've lost their manners. And I do think that the parents of the last generation or two have a lot to answer for, because they've raised a bunch of absolute monsters, and people just don't behave properly. They don't treat each other decently. They've lost their manners. I remember as a child, if I didn't eat properly at the dinner table, I was chased out, and I was only actually allowed to eat with my parents the age where I could hold a knife and fork properly. They didn't want to see me until then. And even though it sounds cruel, it taught me a lot. And I absolutely value when I see someone else who's been raised properly, who has manners. What is your general feeling? Do you think that the world is becoming less and less well-mannered, decent, that our etiquette standards have dropped to an all-time low? Or do you think that that's just me moaning?
I love your intro on that one. And table manners matter then more than anything else. It doesn't matter what one eats with. It's how do we conduct ourselves at the table? How do we engage in conversation? Obviously, with cultural differences, one always has to take that into account. So eating with a knife and fork in certain cultures is the norm, and others might be the right hand. It could be a spoon. It could be a fork. But table manners are fundamental. And one of the reasons why they're so important is because it's a public display where there's nowhere to hide. The moment you sit at a table with other people, you really are showing your true self. And no one wants to sit around a table with people with bad table manners. It just is a poor show.
You may as well put a dog's bowl in front of some people and let them just eat directly from that. I've seen some horrific stuff, and this is in public, like restaurants. Am I right, Philip? The table manners, while we're on that, That comes from a very that comes from Louis the 14th back at Versailles, who used to do his eating in public. He would sit at the table and he'd go through like a 25 course meal, and there was cutlery for every particular course, and people would watch him. And at Versailles, they made manners and ritual an important thing that the nobility all had to take part in, so that they were kept busy and didn't foment rebellion and that kind of thing. It worked so well that it eventually trickled down to the middle classes and even the peasants. And people thought, well, this is a thing to do. We have to conduct ourselves decently at the table. I mean, before that, everybody used to just eat the chicken right off the bone. And, you know, there was kind of, they'd wipe their hands on the dogs as they walked past and that sort of thing.
Crumpets, you've done your research. Yeah. Gee, wow. Okay. 100%. I love what you've just shared. And actually, it was his gardener that went around the palace, because people prior to that were behaving so badly. It was people walking across the grass, picking fruit, walking into people's rooms without knocking, and making a huge caracas around the places of worship. And it was a gardener who went around and put placards around the palace saying, please do not walk on the grass, please knock before entering. And the label that we have in our clothing in the French word is known as an étiquette, which means to label or to stick. And you are so right. So this literally eventually became the norm. Countries such as the United Kingdom really bonded with this idea, and that is how we believe this this journey of etiquette and polite, cordial manners came about. And yeah, you're right. You might as well put a dog bowl in front of someone. Let me give you an idea. If you give me your CV and you put down a whole lot of information on how you've come to where you are right now, but you've just put 20% of a porky pie on there, and we employ you, we take you on board, you interview pretty well. And a month down the line, I thought, porky pies. But the moment you pick up a knife and fork and you sit at a table with people, you've got nowhere to hide. So that's sort of a comparison.
Yeah, I think it's also, I think the guy's name was André Le Nôtre. He was the guy who designed the gardens at Versailles. And he was also, what manners do and what people, it's not just a luxury. It's not something that sophisticated people do to judge each other. It's also useful in making sure that things run smoothly and that people treat each other decently, because there's always room for conflict. And the more unhinged and irreverent people are to these rules, the less likely they are to get along. And particularly in a society like we have in the world today, where, you know, we have many different cultures, we have many different points of view, we have arguments about things. In order for people to actually get along and treat each other with respect and decency, we must agree to a certain code of conduct. We won't, you know, just defecate in the street. We won't eat raw meat in front of each other like vicious carnivores. We won't shout at people across the street. Some people are raised by wolves, but this is not a way to conduct yourself.
They're like the traffic lights in society. You know, they're there so we don't bang into each other. They're right. There to support us, actually. They're there to support us. And anyone who understands the power of etiquette and manners, and when I talk about that, I'm talking about emotional intelligence. And we here at our organization really founded the organization on the basis of an EQ, emotional intelligence. Because when you've got good emotional intelligence, it's almost near impossible to have bad etiquette and manners. Something I want to revert back to, Gareth, that you brought up about, you know, manners and etiquette will serve anybody anywhere in the world. I don't care where you come from. You can come from the squatter camps in Africa, the favelas in Brazil, to the slums in India. If you bolt on the power of etiquette and manners, you can soar like an eagle. That I am 100% convinced with, because I've had the privilege of going into places where they are not privileged with many things. But the one thing that they can bolt on, boom, is etiquette and manners.
All right. So where do we begin with this? The way people greet each other. Where do you start your courses? Because there's so many directions this can go in.
Well, again, multiculturalism is huge. We live in a small world, but as someone said to me the other day, they'd hate to paint it. We've got to understand and respect one another. The pillars of our organization were very much founded on one race, and that's the human race. It was founded on anywhere in the world, anything you want to be, just be kind. The other one was having a what can I do for you attitude. How can I support you? What can I do for you? And really embracing that we have the opportunity to guide and steer people. We have the opportunity to influence. Just as you take on your show every day, you've got the opportunity to support people, have a bit of banter, have a bit of fun, bring humor to the world, but also take down take people down some serious dynamic routes so people start to think of what they could do to improve as human beings. So with regard to your question, it really depends. We start with six-year-olds, and the oldest person that's walked through the organization is 78 years old. And it, wow, it really is very diverse. We do kiddie kit courses where we do work with starting to work with the emotional intelligence side of things in a very soft way. We go down things of teaching them things such as a 6-second rule, which gives them the opportunity to really pause before they interrupt or interject. And funny enough, just on a few occasions of coaching kids on just a 6-second rule, we've had adults then join a course because they were so amazed by how powerful learning the 6-second rule is.
Well, Simpiwe has got a whole list of questions for you, and we've mentioned table manners, but we can take this in any direction. Where do you want to go, Simpiwe? Like, what are you most interested in hearing from Philip about?
I think since we're talking about like food, I'd like to know, when you serve, if you're hosting a dinner party, right, where do you kind of start by like serving people food? Do you start on the right or the left? Because I do know that there's a bit of a do's and don'ts on how you which side you actually plate the food and collect the plates.
Absolutely. And this is general rule of thumb. It always serve from the left and you clear from the right. And it is something that works exceptionally well. And that is how one conducts yourself. Serve from the left and you clear from the right. And when you're pouring, whether it's water, be it wine or whatever it is, you always pour that over the right shoulder of the guest. Depending, the person could be left-handed and they may have swapped their cutlery. Then you would serve their beverage over the left shoulder. But rule of thumb, serve from the left, clear from the right.
And then obviously when you're finished with your meal, I mean, I was always taught that you put your knife and fork together
in the middle,
and then somebody knows you're finished. So you don't have to have discussions with whoever is clearing the plates. They know what to do. Yes. They know you're done.
Yeah. But what are the other ones? Because I do know you put that when you're done, but like, I think when you're taking a pause and you're having a conversation with someone, you have to place it a certain way.
What do you teach people?
Yes. How do you place your cutlery when that happens?
Yeah, so 100%. Just as you said, when you're in between mouthfuls, you rest your cutlery with the knife under the fork and it's sort of at the 5 o'clock and the 7 o'clock position. And when you're finished, the tines go up and the sharp edge of the knife and the fork go together on the plate. In Europe, they tend to possibly have that at the 5 o'clock position, but that is how you indicate either to your host or if you're out at a restaurant that you have now completed the meal. And one thing that I find fundamental is if all of us went to dinner, all of us, 10 of us were at a dinner table at a restaurant, only clear when everyone's finished. Because Sidi, if you were still eating, Gareth, you were still eating, but I had finished, my plate gets whipped away, the two of you might think, should I stay or should I go now sort of attitude. And this is really, really important that we understand to eat at a similar pace to one another. We don't talk with food in our mouth. We don't, chew with our mouth open, that's for sure. And we wait until everyone's finished before we clear the table.
Well, there was this famous story. I think it was King Cetshwayo who went to dinner with Queen Victoria once, and his custom was to pick up a bowl of soup and drink from the bowl. And when this happened, everyone went, oh. But then Queen Victoria famously picked up her bowl and did the same. Mm-hmm. She was like, "This guy's here. We're going to make him feel at home." So customs also change, and if the leaders in society start behaving in a different way, then everybody goes, oh, well, that must be the way. It used to be famously, if you go to dinner with anyone who's hugely important, like a reigning sovereign of a country, and they finish eating, everybody has to stop eating. At that point, the meal's over.
Absolutely. Queen Victoria had a very bad reputation. They always said you'd leave the palace hungry because she would obviously be at the head of the table and be served first. And then the various people down this long table were being served. And her table manners weren't exactly what table manners became, that is for sure. Right. And anyway, what happened is as she's finished, and she might have only had two mouthfuls, the poor chair at the table His plate has literally been placed on the plate in front of him and whipped away again. And she was renowned for that. But I do absolutely, Gareth, that story about, you know, making people feel comfortable at the table is also fundamental. It's really important. In our dining etiquette module, we actually show a lovely clip from Pretty Woman for those of us who are that age that would have hopefully appreciated and engaged in Pretty Woman. And I would urge anyone out there to watch the movie. And it's a wonderful classic. And there's a scene where they go to this formal restaurant and Julia Roberts is given a starter and she's not at all adhere to any, she has no idea. She's never stepped into a place like that in her life before. And the old boy leans across to her and says, I don't know about you, but I never know which item of cutlery to use. And then he picks up the toast starter in his fingers and gives her that feeling of feeling comfortable. And then there's the other lovely scene where she's messing around or can't understand how to use the claws that hold the snail. And Richard Gere shows her, and then she's fiddling with it, and a snail goes flying, and the waiter catches it. She says, ma'am, it happens all the time. Now, the likelihood of a snail going across a restaurant and happening all the time is very is not, I doubt it's ever happened before. But we need to learn to put people at ease in a short space of time. It's not, manners and etiquette are not about arrogance on any level. Mm. Actually, on the contrary, manners and etiquette are taking other people's feelings, emotions into consideration. If people think manners and etiquette, I pitch up to an interview and blah, 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 and I behave and I put my best foot forward when I need to. Manners and etiquette are a lifestyle choice. How are we showing up for ourselves? How are we showing up for other people? When we get back home from work, as a parent, how are you showing up for your family? Are you grumpy? Mm-hmm. Are you bringing the work boardroom mentality into your home? No. Let's talk about presence intelligence. Be present. Engage with people. I mean, we could have a week-long conversation about all these areas and topics. One of the areas that I think all of us have now really fundamentally taken too seriously is the mobile phone and instant gratification. You were talking about that, Gareth. You know, people have started really, it's me, 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 and instant gratification. Why haven't you read my message yet? I've seen the two ticks. Or talking loudly in public. I mean, I've come across the most horrific situations. One of them recently, I was coming back from London. I live just outside London on the train. And one chap was giving his full credit card details to a travel agent over the phone at the top of his voice on the train.
You know, it is to me, you're right. It's not about arrogance. It's about kind of making everybody feel comfortable. And who doesn't like a person with good manners? Who wouldn't want to be around someone with good manners? And it goes to all kinds of things. You mentioned not, you know, chewing with your mouth full. There are a couple of questions here that I think we must address directly. Somebody wants to know, how do you eat a croissant?
You break it.
Like bread. You also don't eat bread with a knife and fork.
How does one eat a croissant? I think it's just as, I love that question. No, it's typical. You break a small piece off. You'd place a little bit of butter on your side plate and you would, depending what culture you're from, but you'd hold it in the English culture, you hold it in your left hand or with your right hand, and then you just put a little bit of butter, a little bit of jam on it, and you put it in your mouth, and you literally break your way through eating that croissant. We never cut a croissant. And same at the dinner table or the breakfast table is different. Toast you cut, but if you're having a bread roll or a beautiful fresh slice of bread, you break bread into one piece at a time, and you have a small bit of butter, and you place it on the bread, not in midair. We're not in a symphony and holding and our cutlery.
You don't use the butter knife to butter your bread either. I mean, people, and then everybody's double dipping on the bread. It's disgusting.
Yes. Fortunately, Gareth, no one hopefully licks their knife. So on that note, you can use the same butter knife if that's the only. But what you would tend to do is if there's a separate butter knife, you'd into the butter onto your side plate and then use your personal knife to put the butter onto your bread or your croissant.
Okay, so here, how about this? Someone wants to know, MM says, how do you eat a drumstick? What do you do with a serviette?
I love it. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we always call the serviette a napkin. A serviette is really, in the French word, is something that's alludes to a bath towel. But not only that, the serviette is something, it's a small piece of paper that doesn't actually serve much purpose. But it's a great question. I know many people do call it a serviette. I'm not splitting hairs here or going to smack anyone on the wrist for calling it a serviette, but it's actually called a napkin. But yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, everything can be done with elegance. And again, I say to a lot of people, when you come to eating certain foods, use a bit of nous. You don't want to be holding it like a Neanderthal and biting into it like a Neanderthal, but you can wrap a piece of paper, a napkin, a serviette, or more serviette in the situation around the end. I've seen people put a bit of tin foil, and if it's appropriate to eat the drumstick with your hands, then go ahead and do so. I would also take and direct people down to a knife and fork with a drumstick. It depends which environment you're in. If you had a picnic, the drumstick with a bit of tin foil over the end is a perfectly courteous and easy way to go about eating a drumstick.
Also, pizza, people get confused with that. And there are preferences too. I mean, I don't like to eat pizza with my hands, so I use a knife and fork, and then people look at me like I'm an alien from another civilization. I just prefer it. It's not necessarily right or wrong. That's just a preference.
Absolutely, 100%. And even the Italians wouldn't look at you strangely, Gareth, on that front, I promise you. One thing the Italians would look at us strangely on is when certain people eat their spaghetti with a spoon and a fork, because it's obviously, it makes a lot of common sense to twirl it against the fork. But, and again, everyone to their own. I'm definitely, one of our things in our organization, we never point a finger. It's not about showing people up or saying, oh, you're doing that wrong, you're doing that. No, not at all. It's about guiding and steering. And in our organization, you'll very rarely hear the word no. Because as you can imagine, when we've been brought up in certain circles, people have been told no all their lives. And so we say, oh, let's think about doing it possibly this way. Or, Gareth, I like your answer, but dig a bit deeper for me. Give me a little bit more flesh on the bone, so to speak. So again, it's really important for us to slow down in how we approach everything. And we've just run the most phenomenal four-day train the trainer course in Cape Town. I mean, I've got a view here today that I think most people would be quietly envious of. Ooh. And lines get back up there. And I've been very blessed while I've been here. But one of the things that came out of this week, one of the many things that came out this week, is one of the students had the opportunity to do a 30-minute presentation on breathing, how important it is to breathe correctly. And oh my hat, I learned a huge amount on the importance of breathing, how it can energize us. I mean, the fundamentals of breathing are obviously huge. It keeps us alive. It oxygenates our blood. But there is so much more to breathing than just what we do automatically. So again, everything that we do in this world is all about learning. How can we, you know, be better than we were yesterday? And I think that's really the approach I'd love people to understand.
Philip, we'll get into some of the details of these courses, because I think a lot of people would be interested in going to them. But here's James, who's our producer, who's a savage beast. He doesn't really have any manners at all. He's completely unrefined. And he asks, should I ever feel obliged to eat a burger or pizza with a knife and fork? I mean, really, you know.
No, I tell you, James, more than savage. When I met him yesterday evening, he had his shirt off and he was, he's out offside. Offside. What am I putting myself in for?
Vulgar. Common parvenu.
I tell you, I know you feel sorry for him and you have to support him. But when it comes to that, James, burgers, again, nowadays you've got these gourmet burgers. I will always take the top patty with my knife and fork. If it's a small little hamburger that you, heaven forbid, but you buy at McDonald's, then eat that with your hands. Absolutely. And the same with a pizza, knife or fork. And something on this note, if you ever go to a formal dinner and you are served asparagus, green asparagus spears, it is perfectly acceptable to eat the asparagus with your right hand and dip it into the lemon butter or the vinegar.
Yeah, thank you. Just we got to start with the small things. Never eat a salad on the first date, says Tracy. That is just messy salad dressing, slobbering and dripping everywhere. It's just a mess. Well, that's because Tracy obviously eats like an absolute pig. But this is not true for everybody. I mean, a salad. Right, there is a way to eat that. You don't have to be a monster, Tracy. What's wrong with you?
Absolutely, Tracy. There are ways to eat the salad. You just fold it neatly and you just go about it very delicately. And if you are confident with your table manners, you won't even know that you just be focusing on your date.
All right, so let's talk about soup. I know about this, and we can help Judas here, who's also just a barbarian. The proper way to eat soup is you eat it with a spoon. It's in a bowl in front of you. And what you do is you bring the spoon up sideways to your mouth, and you sip without making a slurping noise. You sip it back. And by the way, when you're down to that last little bit of soup, you tilt the bowl away from you. You then put the spoon in and you get that last little bit of soup, but always sideways into your mouth, and don't gulp it and don't make revolting mouth noises. Am I right?
I couldn't have put it better myself. That was just brilliantly done. I can always, if you fall short or you need any extra sort of moonlighting, Gareth, you can come along and do some coaching and training.
I'll need a backup plan after this thing doesn't work. So that's excellent. That'll be my next role.
That's beautifully put. The spoon always goes away. Absolutely.
And people just generally the mouth noises, the slurping,
please stop.
I mean, all of this is just completely unacceptable in public. You should not be. If you want to eat like that on your own, fine, stay in your pigsty at home and do it there, but don't do it in front of the rest of us.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. There is nothing worse than hearing those noises. And in some cultures, you even hear snorting going on behind you all. I mean,
So, all right. Are we a little more unfair to women when it comes to our expectations of etiquette than we are with men? I mean, there seems to be a lot of rules around women's etiquette and less of them around men, or has that changed?
Well, funny enough, I actually have a book that goes back to the 1870s. If you will allow me just to leave the screen for just 1 second, sure, bear with me.
Yeah, grab it. Okay. That's perfect. A nice apartment there.
It's
pretty good. I'm finding him quite well mannered. How about you?
Yeah, same here. Learning a lot. You know, trying to keep still. Yeah,
seems to
not
be,
look disinterested.
He's not fubbing
at all.
No.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. So, what's this book? Let me have a look at this.
It's so nice and small.
That's excellent. Etiquette and for gentlemen. Okay. Very good.
Okay.
Now this book. You will see there's an inscription to a Mr. Powell in 1870. So this is when this book goes back to 1870. It would have been given to him when he turned 16 or 18. And if people will humor me on this, I just would love this to be taken into account. High birth and good breeding are the privileges of the few, but the habits and manners of a gentleman may be acquired by all. Nor is the acquirement attended with difficulty. Etiquette is not an art requiring the study of a lifetime. On the contrary, it is the principles are simple and their practical application involves only ordinary care, tact, and sagacity. We all know gentlemen when we meet him, no matter in what garb or under what circumstances. We recognize him by a kind of instinct, since it is not easy to define in what the gentlemanly quality consists. That which will not admit of, and I just humor me, definition will, however, often yield to analysis, and it is so in this case. To be a gentleman implies the possession of certain qualities, and they are always the same qualities. It implies, first, a high degree of self-respect, only equaled by a keen sense of the respect and estimation in which others have a right to be held. It implies, further, a just recognition of what is due to superiors and inferiors, and above all, a chivalric appreciation of the position and claims of the opposite sex. And I just love that. This book is fantastic. It's beautiful. Going back to your question, go ahead, Gareth.
No, I think that's such a great explanation of why it would be worthwhile for people to spend a bit of time learning social niceties, not because they're a luxury that can be built on top of someone who's already succeeded in some way in life, but that they should be there from the very beginning, that people should make an effort to learn these things at a young age and conduct themselves this way throughout their life so that they can be a valuable member of society, so that other people would like to spend time around them and that they feel valued around someone who respects themselves and others and follows these rules in order to make life more pleasant.
Oh, 1,000,000%. Absolutely. The power of etiquette and manners. I mean, good manners will open doors wherever you go in this world. It really will. And for me, this is the key and the key to success. If you get brought up with good manners, respect for others, you have that emotional intelligence, you might not be the sharpest tool in the box, but doors will open for you and you will move forward in your life. That goes without saying.
Sims, any other questions from your side?
Yes. Okay. I think it's a very important one because I get a bit like, when this happens, when I'm out with friends or with a group of people, what's the proper way of excusing yourself to go to, I say the restroom, a lot of people use the toilet, but I do know there's different actual terms. What is that, the correct way to just excuse yourself?
So, Pew, in that situation, if you're chatting to someone, you'd say, would you excuse me? Obviously, I'm going for pee-pee. We're not going to say that. We just do a subtle, would you excuse me? I'll be back in a moment. The loo or the restroom, the washroom, toilet, I know it's the universal word for the restroom or washroom or the loo. If you said to someone in America, I'm going, excuse me, I'm off to the loo, they might look at you sideways, same in various other countries. But yeah, use the polite term. I think the word toilet, I had an aunt whose skin, you could see, actually physically see her cringing and starting to break out into sweat when she heard the word toilet. But yeah, the loo, the restroom, the washroom, those are the nicer sort of terms for going off to relieve yourself.
And obviously, you know, some things people, you just don't need to get into detail around some of this stuff. Absolutely. People feel these days everything is about sharing. You got all these TV talk shows where everybody's sharing their personal problems, their diseases, their sore knee, their sore asshole. I mean, it's just so unnecessary and revolting. People have to learn to have some decency. Don't talk about all this stuff when you first meet somebody. I met a girl the other day and she started telling me about her she had a what do you call the thing on the foot? Like a corn on her foot. And she bunion. Starts telling me a bunion. Jesus Christ. Within 5 minutes of talking to her, all I wanted to do was get the hell out of there. A bunion. Who does that on the first time you meet someone?
Oh, I would have, it took you 5 minutes. I would have left after a minute. You've got a lot of patience there. Yeah, I mean, there's certain things in this world that we keep under the hat, and it's the same thing as in terms of airing your dirty laundry. You know, one doesn't need to do that, especially to people you have no connection with, no bond with, no relationship with. And even then, airing your dirty laundry to certain people is over and above. And again, talking behind people's backs, saying things that are horrible or derogatory, what does it say about you as a person? You know, again, really? Judging people, how quickly do we judge someone? Is it good to judge? Well, if someone's got a weapon, you judge and you run and you absolutely get out of there. But give everyone an opportunity to show themselves.
Except with politicians. I think with them, you can have a totally different set of rules.
So, Gary, I lost you there for a second.
Politicians, they're the only exception to that rule. You can talk about them in rude ways, and you don't have to be immediately respectful because they're rubbish people mostly.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And funny enough, as long as you're not talking politics, and I want to go back to something I picked up on what you said earlier. You did ask me a question about the difference between etiquette for men and women. All of us need to show up accordingly. You know, with all due respect, again, the falseness, the instant gratification, what social media has done it has disrupted people's lives. It's just, we could, again, have a whole nother show on this. But again, yeah, politicians, I feel women should start to take control of countries around the world. I really and truly do. A lot less misery and things going on. In our organization, I'm a big fan and a very big supporter of women globally. And the caliber of people that walk through the doors at the British School of Excellence is just phenomenal.
So we got a question here from Namsla who says, is dress code an important part of table manners? And I can't help seeing how well turned out you are this morning. I mean, normally, you know, to get dressed in the morning is a bit of a chore for people. But if you're going to dress according to how you'd like people to treat you, it would seem to me that that is also a part of manners, not just table manners, but generally.
All right. People see you before they hear you. People see you before they hear you. And always dress accordingly. I'm always going to suggest slightly overdress because then you can underdress. Women, you get away with murder because sometimes you've got an extra beautiful scarf that you whip out your handbag and a few new earrings and you can tie your hair up in a certain way. Men don't have that grace ready at the end of the day. So Namkla, I would always dress accordingly and I would always make an effort to look good. And this doesn't mean one needs to go out and buy designer clothing. Not at all. Find clothing that works for you. Find colors that work for you and dress appropriately.
Maita, please also honor the dress code if you get an invite. And
oh, yeah, good point.
Like smart casual or like black tie, please honor it because that's also very important.
Mamphla, absolutely. Let's say I was a hippie and I was invited to hypothetically your wedding and I decided, you know, I'm not going to form to dress. I'm a hippie. I dress this way. That would be the most disrespectful action that I could show toward you and your partner. We need to step up. We need to find out what the dress code is and fit in accordingly. It's not about us. It's about the people we are engaging with. And it shows huge respect. Not only that, there's actually a thing called in clothes cognition. And if anyone's really that interested in, there's a wonderful TED talk by a woman by the name of Mindy Shire. And in clothes cognition, when that term, when you put on your power suit, whether you're a man or a lady, it elevates you. Boom. That is why they call it a power suit. You feel elevated. And I can assure you, anyone out there, we've all had this experience. When you rush to get ready, you don't prepare, and you're going on your way to a meeting, but something's bugging you. You don't feel that you chose the right color, or you don't feel you chose the right blazer to go with whatever. It's going to haunt you for the rest of the day, and it's going to knock your conscience, and it's going to knock your confidence.
Hmm. There are a few other comments here I think we must just quickly refer to, and then you can tell us a little bit more about the British School of Excellence and where we can find out more, because you guys are on Instagram. Someone said here, what do we do with cell phones? Should we put the cell phone on the table? This is from Professional Neighbor. Should we allow cell phones? And that brings up a whole category of bad manners around phones and the way that people are constantly looking at them. Simpiwe and I started the show this morning. She told me about this thing called fubbing, where people apparently, you know, when you're talking to them and they just look away at their phone and they ignore you completely, or they pretend they're listening to you, but they're actually looking at their phone. Very rude.
It's more than rude. It's disrespectful. What our biggest gift in this world, or our biggest, the two biggest things that we have at our fingertips are health and time. Time doesn't do refunds. If you go to a table and you put your cell phone on the table, that is absolutely offside. Turn your phone onto flight mode. And if I were sitting with you in person now, with the two of you at a table, my cell phone would be sitting behind me, not on vibrate, not at all. It's behind me, it's off, and I want to engage with the people that I want to engage with. It is fundamentally, and I get really angry about this, rude to have your cell phone in the midst of other people where you're getting together for a tea, a coffee, and there's that other wonderful thing. I answer the phone, and I'm with my mate Gareth. No, Gareth, he won't mind. And now I break into a 10-minute conversation, and there's Gareth sitting there, and I'm on the phone. That is just offsides. We can manage expectations. You might say, I've got a babysitter looking after my son or daughter. I might receive a call. That's fair enough. But phone is there for your convenience, not the caller's. And I really want to urge, even if I was standing with a phone in my hand talking to a colleague, there is still a distraction. I'm not in the moment, and I'm not giving you my undivided attention. It is still something that is distracting from the moment.
I love it. All right, well, there's so much more that we can find out, and we've really only scratched the surface here, but tell us a little bit about the British School of Excellence and kind of what you guys do, the courses you offer and that sort of thing.
Thank you for the opportunity. We at the organization just love giving people the tools to put their best foot forward. We have a slogan called Building Confidence, Changing Lives. We have a very strong social platform on YouTube, Insta, X, Facebook, all the social channels, we are on them. I believe we're also on stream on that TikTok. And we really do love helping people from as young as 6 right through to however old it is that you want to continue learning. And we take a deep dive. Forget the history of etiquette and manners. We're not there to put people to sleep. We focus on etiquette, manners, emotional intelligence, presentation skills. We work with luxury brands such as Cartier on customer service, customer excellence. We have the privilege to work with so many people across the world of all walks of life. And we are also very fortunate that we have a global brand. We are based out of São Paulo in Brazil, Bermuda, the Bahamas. We have 2 operations in Pakistan, 1 in Lahore, 1 in Karachi. We're just launching in Qatar. We've got an operation in Oman, and we are about to launch 1 in Vietnam. And being here in Africa recently, there's talk of a few potential opportunities going forward out of Africa.
Fantastic. I love it. And well done, Philip. It's very nice to have you on this morning. Good luck with all the rest of what you do at the British School of Excellence. And hopefully all of these really awful, badly behaved people who listen to us have learned some manners. And we will all conduct ourselves just a little bit better this weekend.
Yes.
It's at least we could hope for, Simpiwe.
Yes.
Thank you,
all
Philip.
All the time, Gareth, please. Not just this week.
All the time,
thank
yes.
Thank we you both try. So much.
I mean, you know, we'll take a small win, frankly. If you look at some of the comments, gee, all right, very nice. That's Philip Sykes. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
A nice way to win, on a Friday, yeah. And end the show on a Friday. We're off. We will see you on Monday morning. Have an excellent weekend. Don't be rude. Try not.